Everybody knows Reverend Maria and what a beautiful, mystical, powerful consciousness she is. And I'm grateful for her presence today with us, as always. It is a gift to have you here, Maria. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, beautiful friends, beautiful Sangha, everybody. Good morning, good morning. Let's dive deep. We'll start off with a wonderful quote from Marcel Proust. The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in seeing with new eyes. Seeing the world anew. And we have the beautiful gift of seeing the world anew through the eyes of Ernest Holmes in this chapter called The Soul of Ernest Holmes. And Connie told me that when she heard the title of that chapter, she said, "I immediately thought of you." And it's true. I love to hear about the soul of Ernest Holmes. And it's such an interesting piece. It's prose, and what it is Ernest contemplating a new vision, seeing with new eyes the creation story. You know, that story that we have told since time, if you will, immemorial, about how we all came to be in the Garden of Eden, and Ernest gives us his take on it. Now, in this one, thankfully, there is no snake. We don't have to deal with that. For those of us that are snake averse, you know, we don't want to go into the garden and find a snake. Look, even the cat doesn't like the snake. But there is an apple, but it's not a bad apple this time. It's an apple of wisdom. And it's a great story about time and timeless and eternal. But mostly why it's the soul of Ernest Holmes is because it takes us into that place. Yes, it takes us into that place. This is going to be fun. Yes, you. It takes us into that place where we get so familiar with Ernest when he's in that mental headspace and a wisdom that cannot be matched, an intellect, a humor, a wit, all of that. But it's that mystical element of Ernest. It's that mystical consciousness that undergirds everything that he shares with us. And he actually only has one message, and he actually teaches only one principle, and it's the primary principle of science of mind. And everybody who is in my classes gets tired of me saying it over and over again, so I can bother you with it this morning. And that's the principle of oneness. That's really all that he talks about. And he takes it from the Eastern philosophy, thou art that. And he is forever reminding us of the I am. That's really the essence of all mysticism. It's the blessing of Ernest Holmes. And in this piece, where he's referring to God as the old man, he's giving us that same message, just as Marcel would say, in us seeing it with new eyes. And he's talking about how God created beings, how God created life. And Ernest tells us, so the old man reaffirmed that while he was going to impart his own nature to those beings he was about to create, that's you and me and the cats and the oceans and trees and life and all sentient beings, he would sort of let them alone to discover themselves. And to gradually come under the eternal laws of his, God's being. But the time of this would not be known to them. But of course, the old man did know, since he knew everything because he possessed the apple of wisdom. I told you there was an apple. It's an apple of wisdom. It's a good apple. But God knows. And so, throughout all of this experience, it says that the eternity time and the timeless knew that there might be quite a bit of confusion here, which I will attest to. There often is quite a bit of confusion here amongst God's beings. But it was the only way God knew to create beings that finally could act on their own, but still in cooperation with God, so that we would never forget that's what we are. That we would always remember. We might get a little confused. We might get a little lost sometimes, but that never means we are not that. Because once we've seen with new eyes, we know that we always are divine expressions. We always are God made manifest. We are the spirit of life and love. That's our truth. That's our home base. That's where we arrive with every breath, every thought, every prayer, every moment. I am that. And it's funny because each of them then plays a part, eternity being Kairos, you know, the long view, just an extraordinary amount of patience, you know, all of eternity. And timeless is trying to sort things out. And time is forever impatient with things because that is the nature of time. It's, you know, it's created this idea of time and then it's held itself to that own law. So time in this story is forever impatient. And it reminds me, you know, of a really funny TV thing I'm watching about vampires. Yes, vampires. And there's this main vampire and he's gone to see his family and to work something out with them. And he's sitting around in the house and finally somebody comes up to him really impatient and says, "I don't understand what's going on with you. I have been looking for you for 3 weeks and you never answer your phone." And I said, wow, as a human being, stuck in time, I thought 3 weeks and not answering your phone, it kind of blew my mind. And then I remembered, thankfully for this viewpoint of eternity, that this vampire is already 1500 years old. So what's 3 weeks, give or take, you know, when you've already seen the Black Death and Renaissance and people landing on the moon. So the idea of being in eternity or being in time, does it change that essential message of the timeless nature of our being? I am that, you are that. We are spirit personified. And that's an exquisite thing. And having that long view for those of us that have been hanging out in Ernest Holmes' house for as long as we have been, and we've watched him from the beginning of sort of taking this idea of what in his mind was science of mind and weaving together all of these beautiful disparate elements of that and coming together in a coalition of truth that is breathtaking. And watching him evolve and watching us evolve and watching that thought evolve over time, to remember our timeless nature through the lens of eternity, is to see that mystical message of him evolve as well. And I know that for each of us here, that we have been on that same journey, watching ourselves evolve, watching the world evolve. What we thought was true 40 years ago when we came into this teaching and who we are today is vastly different. And yet our nature is eternal and timeless. So what Ernest is forever showing us through that beautiful mystical lens is that it is our joy to come together in community to celebrate the movement as Ernest has done and we are doing, is that we are moving from eyesight, E-Y-E, sight, to I, capital I, sight, right? Insight, eyesight. We're moving from eyesight to insight. And when we move from eyesight, E-Y-E, we are moving from reality, creating our thoughts, beliefs, and stories, to I, capital I, sight, is that thoughts, beliefs, and visions create our reality. So where are you hanging out? Are you hanging out where you're creating your reality from your external point of view? Or are you hanging out in that space where your internal point of view creates your reality? That choice is up to us. But always we are moving from spirit, from the essence to form. And it's so grand that Ernest takes us on this journey beyond the basics of that, you know, beyond the four P's, you know, where we learn how to manifest palaces, positions, princes and princesses, and whatever form of prosperity is running through our head in the moment. We're moving from that sense of procreation inside to co-creation externally, but we're doing so continuously at a deeper and deeper level. And I'm sure that as you've reflected on that, you've moved into that deeper and deeper level. Now, when Ernest started the journey back in the old textbook, and this is the textbook, I found all the pieces and I managed to put them all together because they were in all over the place. But when Ernest started telling us about mystics, you know, he points out that the mystics, the highest mental practice, he says, is to listen to this inner voice and to declare its presence. The greater a man's consciousness of this indwelling I am, the more fully he will live. This will never lead to illusion, but will always lead to reality, capital R, bing, reality. All great souls have known this and have consistently striven to let the mind of God express through their mentalities. So Ernest, in the beginning, understanding this mystical nature of us, it is accompanied by light and it is accompanied by a deep inner sense of stillness and of knowing. Because we can kind of get caught up in the activity of mind, moving into the more active practices of things like treatment, visioning, manifesting. And yet Ernest reminds us that those of us here in this room and surrounded by our kindred spirits, the great mystics are those that have taken time to be still. And as I've shared that Ernest quoted, one of my favorite quotes is Ernest telling somebody in a lecture, don't listen to what I'm saying, listen to what I'm listening to, right? So we are always listening to what that is. And he concludes the end of the mystical chapter with this beautiful thought that, therefore, the mystics have taught that in such degree as one's concept of God is sufficient, everything other than that, consider that evil or whatever you call it, it disappears. So that in the end, the method and the technique, something is said, yes, as we listen, but this is a moving thing. And when we reach that other place of illumination, we find that ultimately nothing is said, but something is felt. So it's a process, if you will, of attuning ourselves to that inner voice and not only hearing it, but feeling it. And how often in our life have we allowed that divine guidance to move us beyond just mental chatter to what we feel and we know to be so? And follow that voice without exception. Because if we really are allowing our thoughts, beliefs, and visions to create our reality, it comes from the inside. So I say that that shift is what is known as the transition from bird consciousness to spider consciousness. When we start off and we're looking at the external world to create things, before we have really cultivated and trusted this inner wisdom, this practice, this listening, this feeling, we're like birds flying around. And when birds want to build a nest, what do? They flip and flop and fly, asked Connie, everywhere and pick up little bits of whatever they find to create their nest, right? There's twigs and sticks and leaves and worms and dirt and all kinds of things. And a bird ultimately weaves its nest and calls itself home there. That's what happens when we're first beginning this journey of really accepting and knowing that we are mystical. We first look to everything outside of us and we create our world. But as we go along, as Ernest has taught us, as he said in the Voice Celestial, I vow myself to this, to become a willing vessel, to contain the life and essence of reality and bring it forth in form. So when we decide to become that willing vessel, we move then into spider consciousness. How does a spider make its home, its web? Does it run all over trying to figure out how to do that? A spider centers down. If you can imagine a spider going into like Om and doing a little centering. I have a spider in my bathroom for like a year. His name is Wolfie. And every time I go in, I go, Om, little spider. Om, little Wolfie. Yes, Om. There's an Om from the cat. So the spider then centers down, and from the middle of its body, it shoots out its web. Because the spider knows that everything it needs is within. And so it calls it forth and sends it out to create the world. And then those of us that are brilliantly walking through the woods walk right in the middle of that spider's web, and the process starts again. But it's okay, because the spider knows whatever it needs is within. So Ernest is letting us know this simple single message in so many different ways and forms. He's showing us how to move from eyesight to eyesight. He's showing us how to move from being a bird to being a spider. He's showing us how to move from the external to the internal. He's showing us how to practice ever more deeply this ability to listen and to feel and to trust in that knowing. So, practical application of that. We're here in Florida, some of us, me, Carol, and Val, hanging out in the land where hurricanes and all kinds of amazing things happen. And I was talking to somebody yesterday who was taking a vacation a couple of weeks ago up in the Smoky Mountains on the Appalachian Trail. And as they were up there, they saw that this hurricane was coming. And they live right here, you know, not far from me in Florida. And so they thought, well, we're in Asheville. What could be a better place to be when the hurricane is coming to Florida? We'll be in Asheville, and we're okay here. So they were, you know, in their timeshare up in Asheville, you know, feeling quite comfortable knowing that the storm was coming through Florida. And in the middle of the night, someone bangs on the door and goes, "Get out now." And they look out, and it is pouring, and the floodwaters are rising, and they realize, okay, they have nowhere to go and no way to get there. And everything in the community, they're in a, you know, a condo complex, everybody's like, they don't, you know, everybody's confused. And the thing about being in a disaster is that it's very disorienting. Because what you're present to, talk about mindful, present moment awareness, is what's right in front of you. You have no idea, with no power and no connection, you know, on the internet, to know what's going on around you or how large the scale is of what's unfolding. You just know right now in this moment, it's raining hard and there's things are flooding. So then begins, after some of that rain subsides, the formation of some sort of a plan. And it was like what was described as spiritual practice times a thousand. You know, when you're really learning to listen and to pay attention and to be present in the moment and to trust that everything you need is within you. And so, okay, first, can we get to our car? Then can we go here? Then can we, nope, this is closed. Nope, this road is washed out. No, there's no way you can get through here. No, you cannot drive. No, you cannot fly. No, you cannot walk. And taking days to find a way to get back to Florida. But through every step of that way, here's one more piece of guidance to you. Okay, you can't do that, but you can do this and do that. And then the next piece of guidance shows up, and the next and the next. And we often say it doesn't take a natural disaster or a national disaster for us to come together. And it also doesn't take a national disaster or a natural disaster to be mystics in the world, to be present, to whatever it is that's happening around us, because we are so keenly aware of what's happening within us. And to learn to trust in that, no matter what is transpiring. So Ernest comes to us with this very timely and beautiful message of eternity, bless you, baby, and timelessness, and all of the gifts of mysticism. And so today I want to leave you with the awareness, thank you, hon, I've got that, you're a good boy, that you are that, you are magnificent. And Ernest, I need that, please, sir, thank you. That Ernest reminds us, again, from the voice celestial, when the divine presence is speaking to the wayfarer, speaking to the journeyer, who is beginning this experience and doesn't know how in the world all of this is going to unfold or what comes next, the voice celestial says to him, be patient then, I come with this design. To wake thy master self, the power is thine. In you, the substance of a greater man. In you, the vision of a cosmic plan. In you, the voice of truth, it calls you by your name. Because within you lies the central flame. So allow the gift of Ernest to reawakening and rededicate your spiritual journey of mysticism to bring about the absolute highest and best in your life. And this afternoon, we're going to join together in that consciousness to hold that higher truth for our country and our world. So as we like to leave on our spiritual practice sessions on Sunday night, we bring hands together in prayer and we say, I leave you with good thoughts, I leave you with good speech, and I leave you with a good heart. And we bow to one another and we say, Namaste. And so it is. So, it's been a good Sunday, good message, some divine conversation, wonderful connection. So I invite you all to join me in this meditation by gently closing your eyes and turning within to that divine presence of life and taking some deep breaths and relaxing. And today we're anchoring this magnificent consciousness of home, home. Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh, as his primary meditation of arriving, he says, I have arrived, I am home. So we arrive into this present moment to our home, which is spirit. And we're anchoring that consciousness for everyone throughout the country that is feeling unmoored, adrift. People whose lives have been touched by tragedy and transformation. And as the next system, weather system, moves across the state of Florida to anchor this energy of peace and calm, especially for our home. So as we breathe in, the here and now is our true home. This divine breath is our true home. And spirit is our address. And that is how we know we are always at home. So as you take a deep breath and relax into that knowing of home, like the spider forever carrying it with you, like the turtle carrying it on your back, ask yourself, what does it feel like to be alive in this moment? And moving even deeper, we ask, what does it feel like to be in the energy of this body here and now? And allowing ourselves to be relaxed in our sanctuary, in our home that resides deep within. And as beings of light, as prayerful beings, as sentient beings, we open up to that spiritual guidance centered in our home, our sanctuary. And we ask, Spirit, what would you have me be in this moment? Who would you have me be in this moment? What would you have me know in this moment? What would you have me do in this moment? And centered in the awareness of knowing who we are, what we are here to know, to be, to do, let's allow the circle to widen a little broader, a little more spacious, become more aware of the other strands of the web. And so we join together, weaving this tapestry, enlarging the circle one by one by one. And so in your mind's eye, envision the people that are on this call now, that are in this particular circle. And if you place your right hand on your heart, extend your left hand out. and envision it touching the back of each and every soul here. And as you do, bless your friend. Wish them peace, wellness, wholeness, light, love, joy, prosperity, wisdom, all of the above. One by one, allow your hand to touch the back of every person in this circle. And gently returning to center by placing both hands over your heart. The power that resides within each of us, the power that resides within all of us, it is the energy of transmutation and transformation. That we allow the energy that the world gives us to be elevated to a higher vibration, to a higher knowing, to a higher truth, for a higher use of the law always supersedes a lower use of the law. And so we expand the circle, we look further across the field of the web, reaching out for all of those today that are distressed and not feeling at home because of all the changes in the weather, especially, but anywhere across the world where people are feeling lost. We welcome them into the circle and the energy of prayer. And now we place our left hand on our heart and extend our right hand out. And one by one, we address each and every brilliant and beautiful soul that comes to us for prayer. So when they bring us suffering, we breathe in that suffering and we breathe out light and send that out into the world. We breathe in their sadness and we breathe out love for all beings everywhere. We breathe in their sense of fear and we breathe out faith in a divine presence. And allow that energy to move upon the waters. We breathe in any experience of isolation, And we breathe out a deep and abiding sense of connection with all beings, all life everywhere. We breathe in any feeling of frustration or anger. And we breathe out the gentle, cool breeze of compassion. And if there is anything else, any residual energy that is waiting to be transmuted, transformed, we welcome it into the circle and we lift it into that higher vibration. And then once again, we gently bring our hands back over our heart and allow that energy of spirit to settle deep within our hearts and our souls. And we hear that voice of truth rise up from within us and says, all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. We anchor that in that present moment awareness. As you breathe even deeper into the sense of well-being, envision it as a brilliant white light at the center of your being, and allow it to gently spiral out from within you to touch every organ, atom, tissue, fiber, function of your being, and to radiate out from within you as that light floods the earth with its brilliance. And now returning to that space of awareness, I have arrived. I am home.
I have arrived, I am home. I have arrived, I am home. Breathe into that spirit of gratitude and anchor this meditation with the sacred yes, saying yes to spirit, yes to life. And then we let it be, we let it go, and we welcome all manner of well-being. Taking in a deep breath and holding it for a moment, and exhale on the the sound of the divine, the sound of the heart. Another deep breath in, and one more. And we release the hands, returning them to prayer position, feeling ourselves become grounded in this moment. Our feet touch the earth, and then gently allow your fingers to tap together, moving your body gently as you begin returning to present moment awareness, the space and time. Totally energized, totally alive. Totally here and now. So we bow to one another. Thank you for us practicing together. And when you are ready and have feeling you are fully returned, fully arrived, fully home, gently blink open your eyes.